The Gemara is picking up from the first of the three sections in the Mishnah. The Mishnah says that it's possible to combine one's learning of the section of Kriyat Shema with the mitzvah of Kriyat Shema. That if one is learning that section and he realizes the alarm bell goes off, it's time for Shema, so boom, he can turn it on. Shmamina mitzvah, so in Kiva Libo says the Mishnah, so then he is in fulfillment. So says the Gemara, Shmamina mitzvah trichos kavana. So apparently you can see from here that mitzvahs need kavana. So we'll try to talk a little bit today about the sugya. It's a big sugya, so we'll see how much we can discuss today. Maybe we'll carry it into a little bit next week. But there is an open question in general. It's interesting, the fact that it's really not even resolved out of Yom HaZeh, the question of whether mitzvos need kavana. And it's almost kiyuvu our Gemara wants to preserve the mystery, because we could have thought that, all right, we've answered the question. So in general, the Gemara has this debate, and Gemara in Rosh Hashanah, and Pesachim, and a few other places, that if a person does a mitzvah but he doesn't have kavana intent, meaning, at least on the surface, that he doesn't have a recognition that this act should be serving as a mitzvah, so then the Gemara has a debate whether or not that should count for a mitzvah or not. And it comes up in a few places. In one context, the Gemara asks, what about Hatzokei Lashir? If somebody is blowing shofar on Rosh Hashanah, because it seems like a good idea from a musical perspective, let's pick up the shofar and play with it and sing some songs. So then that's one question. And then the Gemara also has this case, which is a little bit of a funny case, because as we'll see, the Rishonim discussed, if you ask the case a little bit better, that let's say somebody is on Pesach, and Kafo Parsoyim, and he was kidnapped, and somehow he was forced by his captors to eat matzah. So should he be considered in fulfillment of the mitzvah of matzah? Now that's a funny example, because you could have had a better example. You could have said, you know, he was wandering around his house Pesach night, he was starving, he was looking for a sandwich, he can't find bread anywhere for some reason, he's searching all the cabinets, it's almost as if somebody got rid of all the bread in the house. So the one bread he could find was this flat bread that wasn't leavened. Okay, fine, so he'll eat that. So is the fulfillment of the mitzvah of matzah. But that's not the example of the Gemara gives. We'll talk about why not. So that's a somewhat open question. So before coming back to the details of that story, so you could think, okay, so our Mishnah just answered that question. Because our Mishnah says, if you want your learning of Shema to count as the mitzvah of Shema, what do you have to do? Even libo. You have to turn on the kavana. So, up. Oh, okay, discussion over. But no, apparently the Gemara doesn't want you to walk away with that feeling that the sugya has been resolved. So no. It doesn't mean mitzvah shirchas kavana. Ma'im kivin libo likros. Vakakar. What do you mean it's kivin libo to read? But you are reading. So says says the Gemara bekari lahagia. So what does that mean, bekari lahagia? So Rashi and Tosus understand it a little bit differently from each other, which may also be relevant. One could understand the way Rashi is about to say it. So Rashi says, "Kor lagia es ha-sefer im yesh bo tos, dafil l'kriya nami lo miskave." That he's reading it to see if there are any mistakes, which therefore means that even to read he doesn't really intend. He's just scanning it, so to speak, in order to find if anything's wrong, but the fact that he's reading it is itself incidental. So it seems like what Rashi's getting at, I think the rest of this in the Shiurim, but when we talk about Kavana, let's even talk about Kavana for an Aveda. So there are a couple of different levels. So let's say, let's use an example, let's say for Hilchos Shabbos. So we talk about, you know, Chal Shabbos intentionally. So we could discuss at least three different levels of intent. If somebody chooses to be Mechal Shabbos, that's the Mechal Shabbos B'mezit. Let's say we want to talk about turning on the light in the room. So somebody comes in the room and says, I'm going to turn on the light because I don't want to keep Shabbos, So that's the Chil Shabbos Bemezes. Let's say he turns on the light Beshogeg. So what does that mean to turn on the light Beshogeg? So literally, halachically, what's the actual terminology of Shogeg going to mean? So let's say he either forgets that it's Shabbos, walks in the room and happens to forget that it's Shabbos, or he forgets that there's an issue with turning on lights on Shabbos. He forgets the crucial part of the story, either that it's Shabbos itself or that that's a problem. So a Shogeg, in general, is exempt from a punishment, but there is often a kapara associated with it. It's something that needs to be fixed. It's not an avera in the same sense, but it's something that needs to be corrected. There's a lower level also, though. Let's say somebody walks into a room, and it's actually four levels. The lowest level, which is not going to count for anything, is let's say you came into the room and you tripped, and you hit the light. So that's nothing. That's called onus. That was an accident. You had no intent whatsoever. But level three, before you get to level four, is let's say you walk into the room and out of habit. Every time you walk in a room, you go like that, out of habit. So you walked into this room again, out of habit, you just flipped the light on. So is that a shogeg? So it could be it's less than a shogeg. Now we have this category, it's called misasik. Misasik, the way the word literally sounds, you're involved in your day-to-day activities, and you're not even paying attention to the fact that you're doing anything. So it's not that you forgot that it's Shabbos or that you forgot that you can't turn on light. You're not even really aware of the fact that you're turning on the light. You're just going about your entry into the room, and this is how you habitually enter the room. You flip the light on, so it's a lower level. So that is halakhically distinct from Shogeg. The Gemara says that a misasik is exempt from a korban. A misasik is like a shogeg, normally has to bring a korban, assuming that that's a relevant category. A misasik is even less than that. So that might be a relevant category here. It happens to be, just parenthetically, that Rabbi Eger has a tshuva where he asserts that Masasek is still an act that's an Avera, it just happens to be exempt from the Korban. It's usually not relevant because, again, the nature of Masasek is that you're not going to come and ask a Shiloh because you don't realize you're doing it. So to call it an Avera or call it not an Avera, it doesn't have a lot of nafkaminas, it does in some cases, but usually it means it's something that you're so unaware of that you're not making a decision to do it in the first place. There's a whole discussion about that tshuva, which sometimes comes up, sometimes doesn't.
You get aware of it after the fact.
Right. 2 minutes
later.
Oh, for sure. Let's get aware of it, then what are you going to do about it? Okay, so it wasn't out there, but you didn't, there's no carbon, there's no onus, there's no, you know, you're doing it on purpose. So.
Two perspectives. One is, on other Yisurim, but not Yisurim, on other Mises, the other end of the spectrum, Misa. Mm-hmm. So we have someone who is someone who trips and kills someone, he has to run to Yom Rikla. So, I'm sorry, I can't compare, you know, someone who trips and turns on a light to Roteach, but the Misa is identical, but the result it is not, because we're saying here tripping is really is a punishment, and the Gemara brings down that tripping is a punishment, and therefore you did something in the past or something happened and now you're getting paid back and you become a goel adam. That's how the Gemara explains it.
Maybe. Yeah, because there's a couple of differences to try to figure out. So one difference is the question is whether in general, say Shabbos, and let's be a little milder, let's say compare it to Nezikin. So if I damage something before going as far as killing somebody, so the extent to which I'm liable is a little bit different. The nature, the Gemara compares them sometimes, the nature of the responsibility is a little bit different. But also, it's not 100% clear that if I trip, I would be chayav galus. If I literally tripped and happened to chas shalom kill somebody, so it's not clear that that's considered to be a reticha b'shogi, because the Gemara and Makkos, right, has all kinds of, right, so they have to have some
right,
type of...
Right, right, but that's as far as the latter is concerned, whether it's your old or...
It's very bounded, it's very limited.
Right, there really is some... It's closer to a shogi.
Go.
With a reticha b'shogi, that in general, the same way with Hilchos Shabbos, the reason that there's a need for a kapara for a shogeg is because there is an assumption that there's some level of culpability. Okay, so you didn't intend to do a sin, but you weren't careful enough. So
the second, second category, so that was one question, looking at someone who falls, that we don't look by, you know, in Makos and by Miso, we don't look as falling, again, a Leo, you're either, but we still look at it as the, more of the two categories above, which is a Shogeg.
Not necessarily. It's a good question, actually, when it comes to Ritzicha, what I have to do. That's what a lot of the cities in Makos are dealing with.
Right.
That it could be if it was literally against my will completely, and I had no negligence involved, and it just happened that something happened against my control, and it's caused death. So it wouldn't necessarily be considered a Shogeg to go to the Neir Mikla.
Right.
So you have those three categories as well. You know, this idea that three or four categories, you know, the idea that intentional murder, a negligent murder, which is not the literal definition of Shogeg, that seems to be the relevant component.
No, but I was speaking on the act itself of falling. Mm-hmm. Now, I don't remember clearly the Gemara, but I had thought that when the person commits the act involuntarily, the latter as an example, the description is lower level than the Shogeg we have here. It's more like the person who falls and not even, you know, didn't do anything. But the other category here that we have is a person who is medasek. In the concept of Shmir Shabbos, is there an Indian of, there's an Indian of Kim Kedusha Shabbos within itself? So, if keeping Kedusha Shabbos is a mitzvah in itself, wouldn't Misa'asek be over the Indian of always being aware of Kedusha Shabbos?
That's an interesting point. And the truth is, all of the, even once we've already gone so far as to say four categories, let's say, each one of these categories can blur and blend and have nuances within them. And so it is true that you could say that, all right, so fine, here I didn't intend to even turn on the light, but maybe if I was really suffused with Kedusha Shabbos, the Shabbos consciousness, I'd be more functionally aware of everything I was doing, which is a fair point. In terms of halachic categories, you have to figure out whether or not it's going to affect things or not, but your point is well taken, that maybe as a Musa perspective, if somebody is conscious of Shabbos enough, he's not going to do such a thing, but I don't know if that would necessarily elevate him into a Shogeg. And this sugya in general, Mitzvah Shichas Kavanah, lends itself to a lot of subcategorization. We'll probably see about that a little bit. So it is hard to draw absolute lines. But just even broadly speaking, so let's say we have those categories, Mezid, Shogeg, Misasik, and Onus Gomer. So Misasik would mean somebody's, like the word sounds, you're busy, you're involved, you're going about your day, and you're not even aware that you are doing anything. So that could be relevant here. We could say that when it comes to mitzvos, let's say we have at least three categories. Now, one could do a mitzvah of the kavana, meaning that he is aware and desirous of doing the mitzvah. One could have a mitzvah shalom kavana, which could mean that he is doing this action, but he has no awareness or concern that it should be considered a mitzvah. He's blowing the shofar, he knows he's blowing the shofar, but he's doing it because it makes nice music. And you could have a misasik, which would mean that he's not even consciously aware that he's doing the action. Forget about that it's a mitzvah. He's not even paying attention that it's an action. He's going about his day. So let's say, if you want to say misasik in case of chauffeurs, so let's say he's trying to clean out the chauffeur. And he sees some dust in the chauffeur, so he's going to blow through to get rid of the dust. And it happens to be that while he's doing that, he's going to make sounds with the chauffeur also. So there, it's not even that he's blowing the chauffeur without intent of mitzvah. He doesn't even have intent of blowing the chauffeur. It happens to be that his actions are going to result in the chauffeur being blown, but he's not even paying attention to that. So it could be, I think I saw once in the notes from the Rosh Yerim that he wanted to think that this category, you have to check about, Eichmann just came out with his Sefer on Brachas, so we should take a look to see if he quotes this thing. I haven't had a chance to see yet. But that the Rav thought that this was the relevant category to what Rashi was saying here. That the Gemara says, don't take this as proof that you need Kavana. Maybe the Gemara is just saying that, or the Gemara is saying, maybe Mishnah is just saying, that you have to be aware that you're doing something. And maybe the person is not even learning Torah. Maybe he's looking at the Chumash in order to make sure it's a complete text. So he's scanning the words, okay, Yahayakar B'Torah, anything missing here, Yahayakar B'Torah, V'Giyaz V'Nevikra, but he's not actually even aware that he is reading. So if you want to be Yotze Kriyashma, you have to at least know that you're reading. But it's difficult interpretation because clearly this person is going to now flip on the kavana. He's doing it for the mitzvah purpose. So, all right, so he must presumably at least now be aware of the mitzvah as well. So, okay, so you're going to have to really split hairs and say, okay, he's intentionally turning on the reading kavana, but he doesn't have to go so far as to turn on the mitzvah kavana, even though by definition of the sugya, he does know it's a mitzvah now, that's why he's turning on the reading kavana. So we're being very, very specific here. We're saying that, okay, he has to turn on the kavana that he's doing for the mitzvah, but the kavana that he's turning on is not mitzvah kavana, it's reading kavana. So really, as if the Gemara really just wants to stay out of that sugya and say, we'll do whatever we can to interpret this mishnah in a way that's not going to take sides in that controversial sugya of mitzvah tzrichos kavana. So Tosus, on the other side of the page, Tosus says he doesn't think that Rashi is correct. And it's a perish b'kuncher she'en miskavim likros. So Rashi is explaining he doesn't have intent to read. Tamar kasi hakakari. So that he could use the Gemara's same response. What do you mean he doesn't have intent to read? He's reading, yeah. So karchach nira b'kare lagia she'en akare hatevos kilchasan ukinikudasan. So maybe when he's reading the letters, he's not even doing it right. He's just looking to see if the letters are there. So if you need to check a Sefer Torah, let's say, to see if it's kosher, so you have to find all the letters, but you could read the trap however you want. You could read the vowelization however you want. You could, because the fact that you're reading it's not going to change the letters into the wrong letters. He's reading it the way it's written. So he's looking to understand when letters are missing, when they're there, when they're extra. So he's giving an example that's within Kriya Shema where you... you can have
more vows, less vows.
Right, more vows, less vows. The Mkive Libo Lav Davka Eloklomar Lukros Kidin Kinikudasan Vakilchasa. So therefore Kivan Libo
or Kavon is not
right.
It's not well used.
Correct, right. So Kivan Libo would not seem to be the precise language we're really interested in, but rather we're saying that if you decide to actually start reading, until now you haven't really been reading, you're just looking at the letters, you're interested in whether letters are missing, but you're not looking to pronounce anything right. So Kivan Libo means you decide to start pronouncing. So a couple, now it gives us about five gradations. We have a lot of different possibilities of what's going on, that either you're going to decide to read L'Shem Mitzvah, or you're going to decide to read L'Shem Reading, as opposed to just reading L'Shem Checking, or maybe you weren't even reading L'Shem Checking, you weren't even reading in the halachic sense, you were just looking at the words any way you could be pronouncing them. And kivan libo means that you're going to actually turn on the reading part. So there's a lot of different levels that we could be lacking or we could be turning on here, which the Gemara is suggesting, leaving us with very little halacha l'maisa utility from this Gemara. So again, the sugya is left as still an open sugya. So let's spend a few minutes just talking about what the sugya tells us, and it's a longer sugya, so we'll spend a little bit today and a little bit on Monday. So in general, as we said,
Tuesday,
yes, right.
Monday.
Okay, Monday, yeah, right, you know, well, it'll be a long day. Yeah, why not? And we'll start at 5:30. But keep getting earlier. But that is the basic parameters that the Gemara has. A few places the Gemara has a question about this, about whether mitzvah shirchos kavana in Pesachim and in Rosh Hashanah, and in a few places the Gemara has statements which seems to reflect upon it a little bit indirectly. So separate from the mitzvah shirchos kavana sugya, so the Gemara, for example, in Sukkah talks about being yotzei the mitzvah of Ruv and Esra just by picking it up, which seems to already assume you don't need kavana. There's a Gemara in Nazir, which has some famous comments a little bit parallel to the sugya about people who do Avera Lashma, and Mitzvah Shalol Lashma, about people who do positive actions for bad reasons, bad actions for good reasons, which is a different the usage of the word Kavana, but is also relevant to figuring out where your intent plays a role in what you're doing. And it's somewhat of an open question, how we paskin. Rishonim take both sides of it. And there's some Rishonim who say mitzvahs do need kavana, and there's some Rishonim who say mitzvahs don't need kavana. And the Shulchan Aruch is also somewhat ambiguous, because the Shulchan Aruch in Siman Samech was talking about Kriya Shema, so it's our sugya, so to speak, is talking about what we are dealing with here. So Shulchan Aruch says that Kriya Shema does need Kavana. But that prompts the whole discussion. So is that reflective of all mitzvahs? And is that absolutely make your head in? Because first of all, there are a number of distinctions one can make. We can say, all right, Kriya Shema is the mitzvah daraisa. Maybe mitzvahs derabanan don't need Kavana. Because, for example, one might say that maybe it's a suffix in the Gemara. And if we're not sure, so maybe by Torah mitzvahs like Kriya Shema, we should say we need Kavana, but maybe the Rabbanan, we don't need Kavana. And once we're going to say that it's a suffix, so then maybe the Shulchan Aruch himself only meant it that way. Maybe he didn't really mean that Kriya Shema definitely needs Kavana. Maybe he means that misafik, because it's the machlokas, so we'll assume that the mitzvah deraisa needs Kavana. So already you have a couple of questions. Would he say this by every mitzvah? And the mitzvahs where he does say it, is he saying it absolutely needs Kavana, or is he saying that we don't really know, so we'll say l'chatchila, he should have Kavana? And is there a difference between Kriya Shema and other mitzvahs deraisa? This is also very relevant because many ask in the Rambam seems to split the difference. That the Rambam says that matzah does not need Kavana. But by shofar, he says everybody involved needs Kavana, the one blowing shofar, the one listening to the shofar, everything needs Kavana. So it seems like he's splitting the difference. He's, in terms of the shofar sugya, he's voting you need Kavana. In terms of the matzah sugya, he's voting you don't need Kavana. So that's itself a discussion. So the Magen Mishnah talks about that difference, and there's some who suggest, which could be relevant to the Kriya Shema issue as well, that maybe if a mitzvah has an action, so then that action, that's considered to be its own kavana. That shows you're going to do a mitzvah, you're going to do all the details of a mitzvah. All right, so then it shows that you intend to do it for the purpose of a mitzvah. But an action is not there, it's more passive, let's say, if it's just words. So then maybe you need kavan in order to make it a mitzvah. Or let's say in the case of shofar, you're not even necessarily saying the words. So you're in shul, Rosh Hashanah, they happen to be blowing shofar. So to change your presence into an active mitzvah, so maybe that needs kavan. There's all kinds of different points at which you could draw the line. You could say that, listen, if I'm actually getting up and doing something, so then I'm doing it, means I have intent for it to be done as a mitzvah. But in the case of a shofar, a person could be so passive, he could just happen to be in the building when the shofar is being blown. So in order to turn that into a mitzvah, you have to actually have intent.
So the false key would not use kavanah.
Perhaps one could go so far. So one could also say, when it comes to eating matzah, that maybe matzah is more extreme than a normal maisa. Because the Gemara, actually, in the context of mesasek that we mentioned before, so the Gemara says that hamesasek the chalavim varayas chayas, that if somebody violates an isser in the area of eating something or in the area of znus, so he's considered to be chayiv even though he is, so to speak, mesasek, because of the personal benefit he gets, shekein netna, says the Gemara. So apparently eating something is an even higher level of involvement, where even if you have less intent, you're still credited with the action, so to speak. So maybe matzah is a unique example, that maybe even more than other actions, if you are eating something, so we should consider that to be a mitzvah with a lower level of intent, and maybe that's where the distinction is to be found. Some point out that Rabbi Ruderman had an article that was printed in the Sefer Kavod HaRav, which they published in honor of Rav Soloveitchik many decades ago, that it could be that the Rambam is simply talking about the halachos of being yotzei for somebody else. That if we want to create a bond, so to speak, between the shofar blower and the shofar listener tours, so then we need kavan in order to create that link. But a normal mitzvah wouldn't necessarily have the same level of kavana. So all of these distinctions are invoked in different contexts, that the deraisa, the rabbanan, may be a relevant distinction. Actions and non-actions may be a relevant distinction, and there may be a couple of different gradations among actions and non-actions, and maybe certain circumstances, such as trying to be yotzei for somebody else, maybe that has an additional need for kavanah. So again, this is still a big mabucha, it's still kind of unresolved in the Gemara, it's debated in the Rishonim, and maybe even out of Yom HaZeh, it's still an open question to what extent mitzvos need kavanah. So a very relevant question which we'll just set up now, we'll get into a little more on Tuesday, is, so let's say I need kavana. So then that's one way of looking at things. If I want to say I don't need kavana, so you can formulate that two different ways, at least, probably more. But you could say I don't need kavana because I don't need kavana. Mitzvos are completely irrelevant to the kavana. It's all about the action. You do the action, it's good. You don't do it, it's no good. We don't care about your kavana. Or you could say it's not irrelevant. You need kavana, but batteries are included. That if you're going to do the action, so then presumably it implies kavana. So mitzvos ein tzrichos kavana, if one takes that position, might not mean that mitzvahs don't need kavana. It might mean mitzvahs don't need you to provide the kavana, because the kavana is there. Yeah, this borrows an expression, because there's so many different gradations along this scale. So this borrows an expression from the Gemara in the beginning of Zvachim, which we'll have to see if it's really comparable or not. But the Gemara has an expression there. It's really a different context. I mean, we'll have to come back to that next week. But the Gemara says over there that kabanos have to be lishman. And that carbon has to be brought with the proper dedication, intent, the proper intent. But at the same time, there's an expression the Gemara has over there at the beginning of Zvachim, stavol lishma. That if you have intent, that if you bring a carbon, so then the assumption is that it's lishma. And if you did a carbon with all the details of the carbon, so then our default is that it has intent. So on the one hand, there's a requirement for intent. On the other hand, that requirement may not involve much beyond actually doing it, because the default mode is that it is with intent. Now that has major implications, because if you say that's why you don't need kavana, maybe it's possible to mess with that. Maybe it's possible to undo that. And we'll have to get into some possible ramifications of that. But this is invoked. This is a part of history. The major debate between the Hasidim and the Misnagdim. So one of the great Misnagdim, can ask you who is the great Misnagdim of history. So the first name that comes up is the Vilna Gaon. But perhaps one of say the top two or three names among the great Poskim who were involved in opposing Chassidus was the Noda Yehuda. Noda Yehuda of Prague was very opposed, and he has an interesting story about that, where he talks about how the Noda Yehuda was opposed to the fact that his daughter was spending time with the Baal Shem Tov. This was opposed to Chassidus, and that the daughter said to the father, she says, you know, Abba, you don't know how holy he is. I was at the Baal Shem Tov's house the other day, and all of a sudden he got up in the middle of the day and he tore Kriya. And everyone said, what are you doing? Why are you tearing Kriya? And he said that the Orachayim HaKadosh, this was just Nifrin Yerushalayim. So, and it turned out afterwards, they clarified, they didn't have the internet to go on to check, but they found out sometime afterwards that it happened. It was right that day, the Orachayim had just been Nifrin. He said, you see, Abba, you see how old he is? And the Noda Yehuda responded, he was over on Baal Tashchis. You need two Eidim. You have to know it for sure. The fact that he somehow had this Ruach HaKodesh didn't impress him at all.
He wasn't impressed.
So too, he was opposed. One of the major controversial issues of the Chassidus at that time was the L'Shem Yichud. Now it's printed in the Sidurim. But to say L'Shem Yichud before a mitzvah, Noda Yehuda was very opposed. He said the idea that the mitzvah is only going to be considered significant if before you do it, you say, I'm doing a L'Shem Yichud, Kachibrich L'Shchinte. So this is not correct. There's all kinds of objections to it. And one of the objections he has is that it undermines Stama L'Shma. That we assume that a mitzvah is done for its mitzvah purpose. And now you're going to tell me that before I do a mitzvah, I have to say this mitzvah, I'm doing it L'Shem Yichud. So what if I don't say it now? So if I don't say it, you're going to tell me that it's no longer the implication? That was always the case. Every mitzvah we do is L'Shem Yichud Kachibrichu. And to say that you have to declare it, so that's going to have problems. So he was opposed to it. And he wrote in that Shuba, so mentioned that Gemara Nazar talks about tent. The Gemara talks about the pasuk about Zad Darach Lashem, Shikikim Yelkubo, Poshim Yikashubo, that it's all about the path. The path can be taken one way or another. Tzadikim will succeed. successfully go on it while the sinners will trip on it. So he changed it. He wrote, the tzaddikim yafubo chasidim yikashdubo. They're going to trip on it. So the publisher was a chassidish publisher. The publisher changed it back to poshim. And the Yehuda responded, he said, I took the poshim and made them into chasidim. He took the chasidim and made them into poshim. So this discussion has more implications. We will pick up on it.
You know, we know a lot.